welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guest today has been on the program many times before as mayor of Syracuse, but this time she joins me as a candidate for governor. Stephanie Miner recently announced that she is challenging Democratic incumbent Andrew Cuomo in November on a new party line, the Serve America Movement, or SAM Party. Mayor Miner, welcome back to the program.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
So you're running on a new party label, the Serve America Movement, and you're their first candidate, in fact. So first of all, tell me, you have your own positions that relate specifically to New York, but what does the party more generally, at least so far, stand for policy-wise? Where is it coming from?
Well, first of all, it's a group of people who have gotten together before I ever came into the picture, before they met me, and just really dissatisfied with the current state of political dialogue and public policy, and got together around a set of principles and said, we want to change the course, we want to stop this hyperpartisanship, we want to solve problems, and we want to do it in a civil way. And so a number of them heard me on a podcast that I did down in New York City and reached out to a mutual friend and said that they'd like to meet with me. And so I sat and had one of a series of discussions.
Do they have certain core policy positions on things like taxes and health care and other things, or is it more about change and corruption, at least is what I'm hearing?
It's a set of principles about we have to understand in a heterogeneous society that there are certain things that we need to agree on in order to be able to move forward. Civil dialogue, fact-based dialogue, understanding that we have to solve problems. And so there are policy positions on a certain number of issues, but this is not something where you go in and say, you know, look up where are you on, you know, where are you on any number of issues, and you, if you're yes, you can be part of this movement, if you're no, you can't. They're looking to really break away from that model and more towards a model of let's understand that we have to build relationships and we have to talk to each other in a civil way. And there are times when we're going to agree. There are times when we're going to disagree. But we always have to build a relationship so that we can move forward in solving problems and having good public policy.
Now, you're the first candidate in this party. Do you know or have an inkling of where else or what kinds of positions the party's going to try to field candidates in the future?
They have a very active website where you can go and look at the principles. They have a candidate that they're supporting in Kansas and a candidate that they're supporting in Connecticut as well. And so I think that those are what I just have said to you, the civil dialogue, fact-based discussions, moving forward together to solve problems and escaping sort of this hyper-partisanship and this toxicity that has infected all of our political climates.
So let's talk about your particular campaign and what's driving that. And let's start with the incumbent. You know, these are all challenges to the incumbent that are being made by the different candidates. In what ways has the incumbent, Democrat Andrew Cuomo, underperformed enough as governor in order to be sent packing by the voters?
Look, I think first you have to start with the public policy failures that we see across the state. We see basic public services failing around us, whether that's infrastructure, roads, bridges, water mains, or whether that's something equally as important as lack of economic growth upstate. There has been failure after failure. And Andrew Cuomo, when he ran originally 8 years ago, he said he was going to clean up Albany. And the morass that is corruption and the ethical lapses in Albany, candidly, that both parties have been complicit in, it's the price that we as New Yorkers are paying for poor public policy, this culture of corruption and the price of politics as usual. And Andrew Cuomo has been the head of those institutions and allowed that, if not encouraged that, to flourish underneath his 8 years.
Let me pick up on that very last point, because there's this, line, I don't know if it's a fine line or not, between making the argument that Albany is not functioning the way it should, it's not functioning in an ethical way, and the governor, as kind of the head of that, has to bear some responsibility. And then there's another one to say the governor himself is actually actively part of that problem. And where would you come down on that?
Well, I would come down on what Andrew Cuomo himself, how he has defined the issue. As I said, 8 years ago, he said he was going to clean up Albany. Mm-hmm. And 8 years later, we see that far from has it been cleaned up. It's been worse than ever. And his own administration has been touched by it and, in fact, embroiled in it, from his right-hand person, Joe Percoco, to the head of his economic development strategy, Elaine Calieros, to his top campaign contributors upstate. And also in what we see, is what makes it so tragic, is all of the wasted opportunity that the state had to fix things. We've had a million New Yorkers who have left the state looking for opportunity in other places because we couldn't provide it here. That's a million people who left their friends, their families, and their networks who said, I can't do it in New York anymore. And instead of being able to solve their problems, what we have done is seen billions of dollars wasted on economic development programs that don't work, boondoggles that existed for campaign commercials or campaign donors. And the rest of us are looking around saying, this isn't making sense because my friends and family are leaving the state. And I don't see it getting better. I only see it getting worse.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Stephanie Miner, the former mayor of the city of Syracuse and now a candidate for governor of New York on the Serve America Movement party line. Well, let's stick with this topic of corruption in Albany. It does seem to be a shared theme of all of the challengers to Governor Cuomo from whatever political stripe. Let's think about policies, things that we could change in the laws or in other practices in a formal way in Albany. What do you think can be done policy-wise to help address this problem?
Look, I think you have to completely eliminate all of the economic development programs and bureaucracies. They exist to choose winners and losers, and they are rife for the opportunity to exploit them for campaign contributions and donors and corruption, which we in central New York have lived through. You have to eliminate all of those programs. They clearly don't work. They're rife for corruption. And take the money that is there and invest it in infrastructure, traditional infrastructure like roads, bridges, transit, new infrastructure like high-speed, affordable broadband.
Would there be other ways in terms of economic development beyond the infrastructure projects you're talking about that you would change about how the – would you create a new program of economic development
that might be done differently? No, I'm saying eliminate the programs and take that money and invest it in infrastructure. Government doesn't create jobs. What government can do is create environments where – smart people, entrepreneurs in the free market can take advantage of that. And for far too long in New York, whether it was Empire Zones, Startup New York, nanotech, we have seen politicians take taxpayers' money and invest it in boondoggle programs, stand up and say, this is going to be completely transformative. And then lo and behold, in a year or 2 years, you see empty factories, empty buildings, and now what we've seen is even more so indictments follow on top of billions of dollars being spent. Enough. End it.
So let's go through a couple of different issue areas and see what your positions are on those. You've talked about economic development, state economic development. What about the state's tax code? Are there changes in the tax code that you're advocating?
I think first and foremost what we have to do is look at our owner's property tax burden, which is the lodestone around that is how the state pays for Medicaid. We're the only state in the country that makes local counties pay for a portion of the portion of Medicaid. We need to take and eliminate that. The basic philosophy is if you are designing the benefits, then you should pay the bill. So what New York is doing is it's designing the benefits for Medicaid, but it's kicking those costs to the localities, and often the localities that can least afford to pay it. When you're looking at the poor economic performance, particularly to upstate, where there's been north of the Bear Mountain Bridge, approximately, we've seen 2% growth. That's not growth. That's when the rest of the country has been growing at 10 and 11% in this unprecedented economic boon area. That onerous tax burden. So we pay the highest property taxes. Our services are not equivalent to that. And we have to look at ways that we can make localities, particularly upstate, competitive again. Removing that burden from localities is first and foremost.
And remind our listeners what the portion of the Medicaid bill is that's shouldered by the counties. My memory is something like 20 or 25. Is that?
It's a hard cap, I think, at 25%, but it fluctuates depending. But there is a hard cap on it.
And that's a big number because Medicaid's huge program.
Look, in Erie County, the Medicaid bill is equal to the entire property tax levy, and in Onondaga County, the Medicaid portion is equal to 1% of the sales tax. It's like, I think, roughly $90 million.
So if we were to do that, let's just think that through for a minute. It seems to me then if the state were to take that on, then in a sense, it's not like it's going to be cheaper for taxpayers on the whole.
Well, part two of my program would be that the state takes it over and then the localities have to rebate that savings back to the property tax payers.
Okay.
So that it's not like the county of Onondaga comes in and says, oh, I've got this, you know, windfall of $90 million that I can now spend on, you know, another tax break for destiny. Instead, what we would say is, no, we're going to take up the cost. We should be doing it because we're the ones who are determining the benefits, and we have to manage the program, and we should drive those efficiencies in the program. And we're going to rebate. We're going to make the localities rebate that savings to the property taxpayers. That will remove part of the onerous burden of property taxes, and it also deals substantively with the issue of the elimination of state and local deductibility for taxes. As when the Trump tax law passed, what you've seen, the Andrew Cuomo now and some of the state leadership has sued the federal government for doing what in essence looks to me what the federal government does, which is set tax policies. Andrew Cuomo also put into place a property tax cap, which I agreed with. What I didn't agree with and what I think this litigation also shows is let's deal with the issues substantively. Let's attack what is making property taxes so high and making them so onerous and driving people from New York. Let's not just say, oh, let's have litigation over it, or let's put a property tax cap on. And what the state said is we'll deal with unfunded mandates, and then they never did.
Well, just to keep going on this a little bit further, but still, it's going to be the case that Medicaid program is going to need to be paid for by the state. And so what this will do is transfer that, let's just call it 25%, to the state's roles. And so really what the change will be, and it may be a positive one, we can talk about that, is that rather than paying that through the property tax mechanism at the local level, I, as a citizen of New York, am going to be paying that through my income tax, probably largely to the state. Now, that's done in a different way.
Correct.
So it's still going to be there.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about education funding. Small topic, of course.
Of course.
How would you change that? What would you restructure there?
We have to change the foundation aid and look and change the formula so that we can, first of all, meet the obligation that the court said to us in the campaign for fiscal equity. There has to be more equity in New York State. We're seeing wealthy, largely white school districts be able to take advantage of the current formula and poor school districts being left behind. Real economic development for me is education, and we need to make sure that we are training a workforce who can compete in a globalized environment that we live in. We're not doing that. Large swaths of our population are being left behind because the state is underfunding certain school districts, largely poor and minority school districts, and, you know, giving lots of funding to wealthier suburban school districts.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Stephanie Miner. The former mayor of Syracuse announced recently that she's running for governor of New York on a new party line, the Serve America movement. Before the break, we were talking about the education funding scheme, and you were talking about the importance of redistributing that to match the court cases regarding fairness and funding. What about the overall amount of education funding? Do you have a view about that? Would you be looking to, in a sense, not only rearrange the slices of the pie, but make the pie bigger?
Look, before we start talking about making the pie bigger, I think we have to address the outcome. And I don't want to torture the metaphor to say, so is the pie tasty? But I just did. The reality is we cannot continue to spend all of this money and get the outcomes that we are currently have and say, well, the only reason our outcomes aren't better is because we don't have enough money. We have to completely rethink the system. We have to look at Are we doing enough for actual job training? Are we doing enough for technical training? Are we doing enough to support families so that their children can take advantage of the school system? And how are the different models that can help change the outcomes? And we saw that here in Syracuse at a number of schools that were failing. And then we worked with, and the school district and the teachers and the community and parents did yeoman's work to really look at how is it that we can measure, how is it that we can change, and how is it that we can get better outcomes. And they did that, particularly, I'm thinking, with Grant School. And then you saw the state come in and change the program overnight. So there needs to be a sustained look at what is successful. And not every model is going to work for every type of child or school district or school building. Using those different models and then giving it time to make those investments, measure those investments, and then where they work, invest more, and where they don't work, change and move to another model.
One of the things I think I've seen here in the state when these conversations come up is resistance from different institutions and organizations to significant ideas for change. And one of the ones that strikes me in thinking about this would be teachers' organizations, teachers' unions, because some of the things you're talking about might be perceived as threats by them. And then, you know, they're very quick to put messaging on television and you know, and advocate for or against different candidates on the basis of that. So how would you work with that group in order to try to get there to be a more positive environment for talking about real changes?
Look, I have never met a teacher who does not want to make sure that their students excel. What you get into the current political environment that we have, and particularly with Andrew Cuomo, what he has done is pit different people against each other. So charter schools are pitted against public school teachers, and public school teachers are told that they're going to have different assessments, and if they don't have assessments, that there are going to be these draconian impacts. And so immediately, instead of having public policy discussions where people of goodwill sit around and say, we want to change the outcome for the better, what you have is this hyper political environment where that's what your alternative is. If you don't like what Andrew Cuomo has proposed, then you have to go to war immediately, and that war is in television ads and, you know, boycotting the state fair and spending money on people who are opponents running against the governor. I think we need to change the system to say, and I think voters and people feel this way, they want better outcomes. And they're saying, I don't want name calling. I don't want people spending millions of dollars on television telling me that the other person is no good. What I want is better public policy. I can tell you, as the mayor of Syracuse, there were lots of people agreed with me. There are lots of people who disagreed with me. And then on the next day, those roles would flip. And what you learn is you have to be able to build relationships and be able to say to people, these are the reasons I'm taking the position that I am. If you disagree with the reasons, tell me why I'm wrong and we can work through this. You know, as the mayor, I had a vibrant public school system, had a vibrant charter school system, had a vibrant parochial school system. All of those systems are important. And the best scenario is when we all work together and say, let's make sure that we have choices for every single family.
You mentioned the restructuring the Medicaid program before. Let me ask you another question about health care. Would you support the idea of making New York a single-payer state unto itself regarding health insurance? That's an idea that's being pushed pretty hard.
I am open to having that discussion, but what I don't hear when people ask that or say that is I don't hear people say, let's look at whether or not we can afford to do it. Mm. And part of what my reaction to also the kind of this hyper-partisan environment where the Democrats make accusations against the Republicans make accusations against the Democrats, is what falls in the wayside is an actual discussion about the realities of governing and public policy. We need to have that, and we need to make sure that we can afford to do these things. So you just can't say Medicare for all and then just say that that's the end of the discussion. I think everybody should have health care, and everybody should have good, high-quality, affordable health care. How do we get there? We don't just get there by just saying it and then walking away from the discussion and then saying to everybody who says, hey, wait a second, I want to have a discussion about that, just saying, oh, you know, you're a terrible person and you don't understand and you're against people having health care.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is New York gubernatorial candidate Stephanie Miner. Well, let's talk a little bit about your decision to run this campaign itself, and how that's been, and how that plays out in terms of party dynamics and other kinds of things. First of all, why would you run as a new party candidate versus challenging Andrew Cuomo in the primary? I think almost everybody thought if you ran for governor, that's the way you would do it rather than this way. So why'd you make that choice?
Because I think that there is no room in Andrew Cuomo's, not I think, I know, that there's no room in Andrew Cuomo's Democratic Party for me. And that part of what my real frustration with the current political system is that this corruption that exists both in Washington and now in New York, and we have seen both parties be complicit in it. So in Washington, you know, over and over again, we hear Democrats saying, oh, I can't believe that the House Republicans are not holding Donald Trump accountable. That's terrible. Yet we're here in New York, we have a Democratic Party that has turned a blind eye to corruption, has not changed any of the programs that were exploited and obviously used to benefit people who were found guilty of corruption. And I've just said, I can't. For me, people and public policy and solving problems has always been more important than a partisan label. And what and this hyper-partisan political environment that we live in, it has become standard procedure that, well, it's more important to talk about what your party label is and then, you know, be quiet if your party is engaged in something that is, you know, not right. And I just don't think as a in a democracy that that's healthy. That's not the way I view public service. And I don't think that we're ever going to be able to be constructive and move forward and really solve some really important issues that impact Americans' lives unless we say, look, we have a certain standards, high ethical standards that we believe that everybody should adhere to. And the first one is that people are more important than partisanship, that ethics and morals is more important than your party label.
Now, there are other offices that you might have run for, and we've discussed some of them on previous programs that you've been on, and they include Congress and district attorney. We've talked about those. The path that you've chosen here, I think it's fair to say, is low probability. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be tough to win as an independent candidate running on a new party in a very blue state. So, again, sort of more strategically, why this path?
Well, because it's a combination of things. I have never been somebody who has taken the easy path. And I didn't get involved in politics or run for office just so I could say I was an elected official. It's not for me about ambition. It's not about transactions. It's about trying to solve problems and trying to make things better. And in that construct, for me, running for the House of Representatives just didn't fit my personality. And the frustration that I felt as mayor over and over again was this frustration that I was turning to state officials and federal officials and asking for help in a number of issues. And they were saying to me quietly, don't make waves. This is the way the system is. Do your time. Stand up and, you know, join us in these ridiculous ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings. And someday you will be lieutenant governor, or someday you will be able to, you know, have a six-figure job with the state of New York, or you'll be able to run for the House of Representatives and be successful. And again, fundamentally, and I think that this is something that people who are in the power structure always kind of never understood about me, which is that's not why I did it. I did it to solve problems. I did it because I enjoy the nerd part of me, enjoys public policy, and enjoys thinking about how you can make things better. The politician part of me enjoys having relationships with the people that I represent and being an advocate for their interests, often when they couldn't be an advocate themselves. And so when you take those as your principles and you say, this is what my priorities are and my principles and this is what motivates me, then it became pretty clear that the road not taken was the road for me.
But at the same time, just to push you a little bit harder on this, you're a longtime Democratic office holder, and you're a former state party co-chair. So I would assume that this move to this new party label is going to close the door on future involvement with the Democratic Party in this state. You've already talked about how you felt like there's no place for you in that. But how did that decision sit with you? I mean, I imagine it had to have been hard in some ways.
It was a very hard decision, and one that I didn't take lightly and one that I didn't make overnight. But what I just ultimately came to the conclusion, which is if I truly was interested in solving problems and being an advocate, I could not live with myself if I was engaged in a process where I saw party leaders over and over again cater to the donor class, engage in corrupt transactions, really manipulate public policy to benefit certain people who are vested stakeholders and say, this will be great because I can be successful in what is essentially an ineffective and inappropriate and wrong system. I think the system is hurting people, hurting real New Yorkers, and just because I could be successful in it didn't make that any sort of attractive way to live my life.
I want to try to squeeze two questions in, but we've only got about a minute and a half left. So the first one I'll ask if you could just be super quick on, and I'll be super quick on my question here. But two polls have come out so far since you've been in the race. One shows you at about 10%. The other one much lower than that. What do you make of that right now? Just too early to tell anything?
Nothing. I make nothing of it because it's A, too early, and B, we have seen this year, in particular of all years, polls be dramatically wrong and flawed. It's a year and a cycle where anything can happen, and the pollsters are used to the status quo and polling for status quo. So that's not where we are.
And finally, and really, we just have a few seconds left, but I wanted to ask you this. You've run for mayor twice. You've run for city councilor twice. You obviously have a lot of experience as a candidate. What about this campaign experience running for governor has surprised you so far?
What has surprised me is how open people are to the message of change and how open people are, even people who are consider themselves dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, conservative Republicans, who have said, we think that the system is flawed. It's catering to special interests and campaign contributors. I've had people who are supporters of President Trump who have said they're going to support me because they feel like there's a swamp in Albany that's just as bad. I've had people who are dyed-in-the-wool former democratically elected officials and state party officials who have said the same thing to me. So this universal sense that the system is broken and it needs to be fixed has resonated across the state and all sorts of different stripes.
That was Stephanie Miner. Mayor Miner, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.